You're listening to Upon Further Review on the Raiders Podcast Network. Here's your host, Eddie Pascal.
Raider Nation, what is going on? Eddie Pascal and producer Trav here, live, or in our case, pseudo-live, at the 2020 NFL Scouting Combine in beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana. And T-Bone, not so beautiful this morning, dealing with some snow, some morning adversity here in the Midwest of this great nation of ours. And the kicker, we've been told from all our sources, from our all of our high-ranking official sources, it's beautiful at home. We've left the beautiful weather of Northern California, we've shipped across the country, and now we're literally in the snow. Not great. Not great, but what is great is everything we have got done so far in the early part of the week here in Indy, and we are only going to keep rolling, brother, because this train is on the tracks, and it ain't stopping. It's not. It simply will not, and that begins with our show today, our first of two, possible three, who knows? The programming schedule, as everyone knows with this fine podcast, is fluid. So, what are we going to do today? We're going to get through all the business of the day, and then we are going to welcome in the man himself, Double M, Mike Mayock, the general manager of your Las Vegas Raiders. We're going to chat with him. We're going to break it all down with Double M. We've heard a lot from Double M over the past 24 hours and change, but that's good. And we're going to keep hearing from him in just a little bit. But before we get to that, I feel like we do have to address, ever so briefly, Travi, the state of the CBA. And I try not to do a lot of businessy type things on this program. I've really gone out of my way not to do that. For better, for worse, who knows? Time will tell. But one thing that we do, I feel like we do have to mention, is that as of late last night, I was in bed at this point, so I was informed about this morning at a very early hour when I rose. But the NFL Board of Player, quote from the NFLPA that they put out a tweet last night, the NFLPA Board of Player Representatives voted to send the proposed collective bargaining agreement to the full player membership for a vote. So, what does that mean? That means we are one step closer to a ratified, approved, new, amended CBA, which is very exciting for all of us because no CBA, no ball, no ball, no tent. If so facto, need a new CBA. So, we'll get more into this thing as it, or when it is eventually approved, and we're not quite sure when that will be in a official nature, but kind of just some of the highlights of the stuff. You guys have heard all about the 17-game season, some additional things from our good friend Adam Schefter, a.k.a. the Chef Daddy, cap on international games, training camp padded practices reduced from 28 to 16. That's a little interesting wrinkle. 2 weeks now to get ready for week one. No fourth preseason game, which is a blessing upon blessings that we have not seen in a while because, as everyone knows, my feelings on the preseason, well documented. Get rid of it. No need for it. No extra bye week in the regular season. And the rosters would expand from 53. So instead of 53 guys on the active roster, you go to 55, and 48 guys are dressing on game day instead of the current 46. Practice squads go from 10 to 12 and likely to 14 later on down the line. But yeah, those are kind of the highlights. We're going to get into it more with KMM in a little bit when he enters the program. But those are kind of the big ticket items. And will it happen? It sounds like it probably will. Is that going to be a good thing? Yes, it will be a good thing in the sense that ball will continue. The tent gods will be generous and all that. But there is definitely a lot to kind of iron out. We were just talking last night at dinner when we were kind of just spitballing about where this stands. How do you figure out who gets that 17th home game, right? Someone's going to get an extra home game each year. What does this do now for the preseason in terms of how much guys actually play? I don't know. We'll figure it out. But like I said, overall good news, and we will see where this goes. But we move on. That was too much business. I didn't like doing that, Trav. I know we had to do it. We had to talk about it. It was too businessy for me. You know what I mean? I felt gross. As I said, our guest this week, today, because this ain't stopping, GM Mike Mayock, as I said, Mike, so good to us. with his time. He's a busy man here in Indy. He ran through the gauntlet yesterday, but at the very end, he saved some time for your friends at Raiders.com. So let's just rock and roll right into it. We touch on numerous things with Double M. So, without any further ado, make that sound, Travi. We're rocking and rolling with that interview with Mike Mayock.
A year ago, the last time we sat here, a little over there in that stadium, but you were just getting kind of familiar with the role, just kind of easing yourself into it. I don't know if easing is the right word, but
probably not.
A year
not
now,
with Gruden.
Yeah, but now, fast forward a year, what's the biggest lesson you learned from 2019 to this year?
It probably has to do with managing people, because if you look at what I did for the last 18 years at the NFL Network, I was a lone wolf. I was only responsible for my own work. Show up at the combine, know 337 players, spit it out on television, go home and get ready for the draft. Come to Oakland, and now there's a whole organization set up. I've got to hire new scouts. I'm involved with John on every facet of the organization. And instead of just myself, I've got to worry about not only the individual talent of our ball club, but how do you build a team? And collecting talent is one thing. Building a team is a different conversation. And I think the biggest challenge, and it continues to be, is making sure John and I have the culture we want. And that means you hire the right people on the coaching staff, the scouting staff, and then you bring the right players into the building. So culture to John and I, the foundation type players, that's the most important thing to us.
Do you think the interview portion really the biggest takeaway that you get from this week here in Indianapolis?
By far. In the interview process, it's only 18 to 20 minutes this year, okay? 45 guys. But what happens is if we really like a guy or really dislike a guy, we can kind of say we need him for a 30 visit or we don't. And the 30 visits are we get a full day with the kid in our facility in Alameda. And you're only allowed 30. So it's really important to decide which kids you're bringing in and which you aren't. So we go through these kids, and if they check out, we don't need to bring them in again. So in 18 or 20 minutes, if we can qualify a kid and say, okay, we can move on, awesome. Some other kids might have red flags. We'll go, oh, got to bring them in and let John really grind them on football, on mental, on whatever. It might be character concerns. We got to get them in front of our psychologist. So there's all kinds of things that go into these decisions. And I think the interviews this week set the table for the rest of the season.
You know, so much of the talk of this offseason, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier today, was the need for this team to get better at wide receiver. And you've talked, you said, hey, it's buyer beware selecting wide receivers in the first round.
Yeah.
When you look at the guys that have found success in that early part of their career, first round guys, do they all share any similar traits, or are they all kind of unique beasts?
The hard thing is to determine in advance whether or not a young man can compete year one. So I talk about year one production. And I'll give you an example with Hunter Renfrow. Hunter Renfrow was a fifth round pick. He had 49 catches for 605 yards. So I went back for the last 5 years and looked in the first round. 17 wide receivers in the first round. Okay? Only three of them had better numbers than Hunter. Think about that. 49, 605. And only three first-round wideouts had better than our fifth-round guy this year, who missed three games. And there's a bunch of reasons for why first-round wideouts struggle year one. But I think the challenge for us is to say, out of that group of talented young men, which ones have the mental acuity to learn John Gruden's offense? That narrows it down. Which ones have the physical specifications we demand? That narrows it down a little bit more. Now we got to find out how well he competes and how tough he is. Because ultimately, that really is going to determine how much success he has or doesn't have in year one.
You know, we were standing here a year ago, and you said that the mission going into the whole offseason, the draft process, was finding foundational guys.
Yeah.
Does that remain the goal in year two? Obviously, an improvement on the field in 2019. But is that still the goal for you and Coach coming into this week in Indy, is finding foundational players to build to this roster?
Hell yeah. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, we talk about building a foundation that you can that starts where we're going to be and continues it forever. And John and I are on the same page. We talk about it free agency. We talk about the draft. What kind of people do we want in our building? Now, John's always going to be the type of guy that he can be a little more edgy. Like, I want that guy. Why can't we absorb that guy? Why can't we help him? And I'm a little bit more conservative. And I think it works out well because the two of us sit in the room and we close the door and we come to a decision that we believe is the best one for the Raiders.
Are you more comfortable having those candid conversations, those debates with Coach, than you were a year ago?
I think I was pretty comfortable a year ago. I knew John for a lot of years. I'd never worked with him, but I knew John. So I don't think being candid is one of my problems. I mean, sometimes I'm a little too blunt. But John and I, we have a respectful relationship where we can close the door, we can get into it. But at the end of the day, it's what's best for the Raiders.
You know, looking at the current state of these 2020 Raiders, Josh Jacobs, a tremendous rookie year. We re-upped Jalen Richard this offseason. DeAndre Washington, now a free agent. But when you take a look at that group, that running back group in particular, what really stands out to you? And what do you think that needs to be added over the next couple months?
Well, first, I think Kirby Wilson, our running back coach, has done a great job. I love the way Kirby works with the young guys. Don't forget Alec Ingold is in that group. So you start with Josh and Alec, two rookies, both of whom had Pro Bowl recognition last year. We think that Jalen Richard might be the best third down pass protection running back in football. We needed to sign him back. We have. So what do we need in that room right now? Probably some depth. Who can share some carries with Josh? Who can take some of that load off him so perhaps he can develop more as a pass receiver?
The linebackers, another kind of hot topic this week here in Indy. When you look at the state of the linebackers on this roster, obviously an area that needs to be filled and an area that needs to get better. Do you see players here in Indy that you think kind of fit the mold for what you and Coach Gruden want to do at that position in particular?
Yeah, we're not very good at linebacker. Be very candid about it. We're not. We need to get better. And today's NFL dictates the need for speed. And when you're playing against Kansas City, that gets exaggerated to another level. So, you know, there's no secret on defense in general, not just at line. We need to get younger, more athletic, and we need to play in a different fashion, and I think we will.
You know, you said there's obviously room for improvement at linebacker, but one group across the board that really did play well in 2019, the offensive line. And you look at this offseason, re-up Richie Incognito, Denzel Good's going to be back in the mix. Rodney Hudson's not going anywhere. When you look at those big fellows up front, you have to be very pleased that group's going to stay together going forward.
I think they're, you know, we can talk about quarterback. That's the sexiest position in all of sports. But I think the foundation for your team starts with the offensive line. And I'm happy we've invested dollars, we've invested draft picks, and I think we'll always continue to do so.
Well, 2020 is going to be exciting year for this organization, this franchise. Thank you for spending some time with us, and we'll catch you later in the week.
Thanks, Ed.
And like I said, anytime you get a little Mike Mayock FaceTime, to quote one of our close friends, Matt Walks, that was a pretty good time. So, we move on from Double M, we wrap up the program as we always do. It's Victory Formation, Eddie Pascal, producer Trav, the great KMM Cannon, Booby Cannon Cartwright Martin, bit of a spoon fill. And then today, very exciting, we're mixing it up, right? We're throwing things at the wall, we're seeing what sticks. We welcome in our digital Don, a man who is with us here in Indy, rocking and rolling on the back end of the website, doing all sorts of things that frankly are above my pay grade. Logan Norton. Logan, how are you, sir?
Good. How you doing, Eddie?
Oh, just blessed. I got to say, by the way, I mean, for the good people at home who obviously can't see us, your mustache looks incredible. That's Italian evaluator stash if I've ever seen one.
I was telling one of our videographers, Sam Freed, last night, that
blessings
I feel good
Sam.
About the mustache when I'm around you guys, but we were introduced to some people I've never met before yesterday here on Radio Row. And I couldn't help but noticing their eyes moving up and down towards where my lips are and where my eyes are. And I felt a little weird because I then realized that I have this grotesque mustache.
I wouldn't call it grotesque. I mean, it's well-maintained. It's well-manicured, certainly.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I feel good, and then I meet someone I don't know, and I'm like, I feel like I look like an idiot. But I have to wear it because people have told me that I should shave it, but now I can't shave it because they've told me to shave it. You know, like I'm just riding it out.
It's the spite stash.
Yeah, it is a spite stash.
Yeah, the spite stash. I respect that immensely.
I mean, who do I have to impress?
Well, I mean, that's a good point. Did Double M say anything to you about the stash yesterday?
He didn't. I really thought Double M was going to roast me in some capacity, but he didn't.
Well, maybe
Grudog. He held his tongue.
Maybe Grudog will say something today when we link with him.
Oh, boy. Gruden would for sure say something. Yeah. That concerns me. I'm going to try to hide from him.
Speaking of Double M, because we've already gone off the rails in about 3 minutes, it's interesting to me, just thinking back to yesterday, thinking back to Mayock's time at the podium, the scrum, really all of his media escapades, he was pretty consistent in kind of walking back the first round wide receiver talk. And listen, this is not a secret. We need some help on the outside. Got to have it. But it was interesting to me that he doubled and tripled down, being like, listen, it's really dangerous to pick a wide receiver in the first round, yada, yada. Now, I'll ask you, and then I'll ask Logan as well, KMM. Do you think that was truthful, Double M, or if it was a bit of a smokescreen to kind of throw people off the scent of what we're going to do at 12?
It's probably a smokescreen, just considering every mock draft has us picking a wide receiver at 12 for the most part. But I thought the best thing he said all day yesterday was how the college game, the transition from college to the NFL, it's hard for wide receivers to put up numbers in their first year because it's such a big every position, it's probably one of the biggest jumps for a wide receiver because they're going from playing guys that are in zone coverage to playing guys that are in press coverage, and there aren't a lot of press corners in college. So when they have a full-grown man bodying them at the line of scrimmage, it's challenging for them. And then on top of that, if they are off chance able to get past that guy, their knowledge of the route tree isn't what it should be entering college because they're looking at the sideline for their individual position coaches to tell them what route to run on every play rather than knowing every play for in every route for the X, Y, and Z position. So,
and we know with the Grudog that he – I mean, it's a requirement that you're able to do all three. I don't care if you're a rookie coming in, if you're the 17-year vet, you got to be able to rock and roll on all three positions for him.
And I imagine that's why he loves Hunter Renfrow so much because Hunter Renfrow – you know, obviously he had a couple big games, but what he was able to do in terms of his knowledge of the game and his IQ of the game, outstanding. And he was able to play all three positions.
It's funny you bring up Hunter because I think the first time we brought him in, right, and this has kind of been the shtick with him his entire football career, is you look at him, he looks like a guy. You're like, how is this dude going to go toe-to-toe, mano-a-mano with some of the biggest, most physical cornerbacks in the NFL? And I think it kind of speaks to what you were saying where he's just an incredibly intelligent guy. He's, you know, quicker, stronger, whatever, than everyone thinks. But he has such a unique and kind of, you know, overall knowledge of the entire offense that he knows he can find those pockets to get open.
Yeah, he's a cerebral guy.
Cerebral. Very cerebral. Logan, what do you buy from Double M yesterday? You buying us passing on a first-round wide receiver or what?
No, we're definitely going to draft the first round.
That's confidence. Yeah. You come on the pod once and you're just making these spicy takes. Logan Watson goes, 100%. At 12, lock him down.
Lock it down.
Put it in pen.
Yeah, I like CeeDee Lamb.
You Lamb guy?
Yeah, but Jerry Jeudy, they're very good, but I worry about first round receivers a little bit. History hasn't been.
They have not been very kind at all.
So, I mean, obviously there's like AJ Green, Julio Jones, but.
They're a rare breed.
Look, you know, Josh Dotson, Corey Coleman.
Kevin White.
Sammy Watkins.
Who do you buy, KMM, more? If I had to give you one, who are you buying more, CD or Jeremiah Jeudy? As our senior talent evaluator. Or I guess junior evaluator since Double M's here now. But
I know it's not fair to compare him to Amari Cooper, but Jerry Jeudy reminds me a lot of Amari Cooper in the sense that obviously he went to Alabama. He's a really great route runner, but – I just don't know in terms of consistency. I don't know. I mean, CeeDee Lamb, it's a toss-up between the two, right? I mean, Logan said he likes both, but Logan, what is that you like both? Like, what do you like more about each guy?
CeeDee Lamb, he can move around, big playmaker, speed. Obviously, Jerry Jeudy, the route running. Either one helps, right?
Yeah, you need someone.
Yeah, so that's why caliber. I think – But, I mean.
It's kind of one of those things where it's like, it's kind of whatever your flavor is, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, Double M might like one thing. You know, the Chargers GM might like another. I think it's hard to say this early in the process, but it feels like there's really no wrong answer in terms of if it comes down to those two, right? It's probably you know, it's kind of like when you're buying a car, you know, you got two cars and you're like, oh, I like both of them. And then you're really just getting into the nitpicky. I mean, T-Bone, I assume that you as a man of vehicular excellence, like when you're buying your vehicles, you know, you're looking at, oh, I really like them, but then you're really getting, oh, this one gets better gas mileage, which actually, as I say that, you probably don't give two hoots about, but that's how it kind of feels, you know, like you're kind of just nitpicking the things that you don't like, and no one's going to be perfect, right? There's no perfect fit at 12, 17 in the third round, but
I wonder, not to interrupt you, I wonder
Well, you
how,
did, that's exactly what you did.
Well, I'm continuing now. Well, I don't understand, or I wonder how the depth at the wide receiver position will impact CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy's draft stock. Like, I wonder if more teams will pass on them if they don't if we don't take one at 12. I wonder how far they'll drop with the teams knowing that they can get a super talented wide out later in the draft. Like, it's continually discussed. And it's one of the biggest storylines.
Deepest wide receiver classes
in like the last decade. So if you have that knowledge, you don't feel as guilty about missing out on CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy at the top of the draft because you know you can still get a stud later on. So I wonder how that will impact whether or not they stay in the top 15.
And this is probably a question for someone who knows more about ball than us, bigger football guys than you and I. But I wonder what the kind of, you know, we hear all the time that Jeudy and CeeDee are kind of the creme de la creme. They're tier one. I wonder what the difference is between the tier one guys and, like, the tier two. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's the thing. I don't know if there is a huge discrepancy. Not from what I've seen or what I've heard. I mean, no one's made it seem like CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy are leaps and bounds ahead of everybody else. I think they're just clearly the top flight guys because based on their production in college. But Henry Ruggs, that's another guy that people are really high on. I don't know. Logan, I want to get your opinion on something, though, because yesterday you and I were chatting about the linebacker position, mm-hmm. and you asked me, what do we have to do to trade up and get Isaiah Simmons? I don't know.
I don't know either.
But I'm curious what you think we should do if we wanted to go get Isaiah Simmons.
I think if he fell to, like, 8 or 9, maybe 12 and a third, is that
– You think that's enough?
Who's pick?
That's like three or four spots. I don't know the value.
Yeah.
We need either. You got to bring up the trade chart.
Yeah, I was going to say, we need the chart.
What if you had to give up a 12 and two-thirds?
For Simmons?
Yeah, to move up from 12 to 9.
But then you have – then you go – you still have the two first, right? But then you have one-third.
Exactly. Yeah. But if
– you have no seconds. You have no seconds either.
No. So you have three in the top, what, 91?
Yeah, and I know Eddie wants to keep that extra third rounder because he wants to trade for Larry Fitzgerald. So
yeah. I mean, listen, Cardinals are gonna call. You got to have that third to offer, baby.
But I agree with you, Eddie. Having only one third left after trading two away, we've got a lot of holes to fill mm-hmm. on this roster. So I don't know.
Isaiah Simmons is.
He's legit.
Else.
He's legit for sure. But you know, I'm a Patrick Queen guy.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine at 19, yeah.
You also said that you like Kenneth Murray at 19. What is it about Kenneth Murray that you like?
Just a tackling machine, you know, sideline to sideline speed. He has some flaws, though. I mean, I've seen him drop second round. But, yeah, I think if you come out with, like, Jerry Jeudy and Patrick Queen, I think that's a win in the first round for sure.
That's a good haul. That's a good haul in the first. I just – oh, it seems like a lot to give up to move up KMM. And it's hard, too, because we don't really have, like, a – you know, we don't really have, like, a basis to, like, know what Double M would do. Like, we haven't seen Mike move up. You know what I mean? Mm-mm. Granted, the sample size is one draft. But, like, when Reggie was here, we knew Reggie rarely moved up. Like, that was not part of his draft philosophy, was to go up.
He always moved back.
He was a big move back. He loved moving back. Like, oh, we're going to start it. We would start at, like, 11, and then we'd end up picking it at 44. And we'd have 17 17 seventh round draft picks. The entire seventh round was just us. We would pick, the Raiders are on the clock again. Pick, Raiders on the clock again. That's all we did.
With Mayock last year, he addressed our needs and he wasn't afraid to pick like the big name guys that were like Josh Jacobs, right? People had us taking Josh Jacobs at 24 for ages. Like the entire mock draft process, every single person was like Josh Jacobs, that's gonna be the guy. And then as soon as the Raiders come around on the clock, Josh Jacobs' name gets called. So, I don't know. I feel confident knowing that he's going to make the best decision. You know I love Double M.
I know you love Double M. The one thing that I love since it's become the Double M Love Fest is you know that my draft philosophy is such. I don't like moving up and getting guys. And the one thing that I do love, though, I'm big on guys that produced in college. Like, I don't want you to be, like, the small school prospect that, oh, he just needs another year and he's going to be the great. No. I don't care if you went to small school. I don't care if you went to Alabama. I want you to put up numbers, though.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm a production guy.
For
this
sure.
This is a production-based business.
For sure. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I have no problem with you taking a small school guy later in the draft. But if you're taking
you're anti small school. You have a bias against small schools.
Because their sample size versus big conference teams is minimal. Like that was the biggest knock. This is a terrible comparison because we obviously all know how talented and amazing Khalil Mack was and is. Khalil, he went to Buffalo and his biggest knock during the draft process is that he only had one game against Ohio State.
And what
did
he do?
Of course,
he produced.
Of course, it's a bad comparison. But I'm saying not everyone is Khalil, clearly.
Sure.
Not everyone is Khalil.
See, my bias with that, I don't care that much. I don't care if you went to a small school. It's all about, to me, it's the numbers, man. It's the numbers. Raiders legend Keelan Doss, small school guy. What did he do at Davis, though? Put up numbers.
Yeah, but what has he done?
Listen, man.
What has he done? That's a bad that's exactly my point. That's exactly my point. But I don't feel bad because he was an undrafted guy. He's produced for us being an undrafted guy. If we would have gone Keelan Doss.
Here's a perfect example. Max Crosby.
Yeah, fourth round guy. But you just can't take a guy in the first three rounds from I don't know. You see what I'm saying, Logan? Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm more comfortable.
But you're blinded by the school. You're blinded by it. You see the logo on the helmet. When these guys come up and they start benching later today and all that stuff, you're not going to know that this guy went to Southern Arkansas Tech. You know what I mean?
It's not about the logo, though. It's about the sample size. Like, who are these guys playing? Who are they playing? I'm not saying that you can't find good talent at small schools because you clearly
can.
It
sounds exactly like what you're saying.
Can I bring up a guy?
Yes, of course.
Cooper Kupp.
Cooper Kupp, Eastern Washington, yeah. That's a
Produced,
fair point.
Yeah.
Stud.
Been a really good player. And what did Cooper Kupp do in college? Probably put up stupid numbers, mm-hmm. right? Listen,
absolutely
I'm
stupid
with
numbers.
I'm
yeah.
with you. If
where was he drafted though?
Third round, I believe.
See, but maybe to me second. That's such expletive, Kyle. Because like, think about this. What changes for you in between the second round and the third round? Like it's this fake world that you've created where it's okay to take a small school guy in the third round, but God forbid you do it four picks earlier in the second. As our draft guy,
right,
I feel like your philosophy's got to be a little more well-rounded.
Okay, I agree with you. As long as they've produced and they've proven their numbers back up their game, that makes sense, right? But look at Mitchell Trubisky.
North Carolina's not a small school.
It's not a proud football school by any means, by any stretch of the imagination. When you think of North Carolina, do you think football? I certainly don't.
I think of his greatness. I think of Air Jordan.
You think of basketball.
I think of a single hoop earring.
Mitchell Trubisky had one good year before he got drafted.
All right, here we go.
He had one good year, and he got drafted at the second overall pick, which is erroneous.
Let's play this
Ridiculous.
Game. Let's play this game. You know who had one good year and is going to go number one overall this year?
Joe Burrow. Mitchell Trubisky also didn't set the college football record with 60 passing touchdowns and 77% completion.
That he had one good year, right?
Yeah, but his numbers weren't like enough to even make it like an argument. I don't know. I'm going to look up here. Ramble, because I want to look up Mitchell Trubisky.
Look who he was playing, too.
Exactly.
But the ACC is legit. I mean,
it's not legit.
It's not SEC
the
legit. It's not SEC legit. I'll tell you that. But you're acting like they're playing these phony schools. You've upset Marcus. You've upset.
Good. He's talking in my ear. I can't hear.
Exactly. Thank you, Marcus. Marcus brought up a great point. Willie Brown, small school guy, produced.
Mitchell Trubisky in his junior year at North Carolina had 3,700 yards and threw 30 touchdowns.
That seems pretty okay to me.
Not a bad year. Not a bad year. But it's not. But you can't compare him to Joe Burrow, who doubled that number in touchdown passes.
I'm just saying that you're making these claims, where he only had one good year, yada, yada. You don't have the sample size. But you would take Burrow at one in a heartbeat. I know you would.
Yeah, for sure. We got actually, speaking of which, Logan secretly is a Bengals fan.
So I don't know if it's secretly. I think he's made that
pretty
open. I think he's made that
pretty
clear.
Yeah, but I mean, the nation doesn't know that.
That's fair.
The nation
that's
doesn't
fair.
Know
We're
that.
Just introducing the nation to Logan. But yeah. Secret Bengals fan. What
He's also
do?
A Queens fan, but I won't hold that him against him.
Yeah, fair enough. This is a dumb question, Logan, but you're sitting at one. You're the GM of the Bengals. It's got to be Burrow, right?
It has to be Burrow.
It's got to be.
I wish the Bengals had a GM, but.
Do they really not have a GM?
Mm-mm. Duke Tobin, player personnel.
They're rolling no GM?
No GM.
Oh, I respect that.
So, yeah, it's just he was unbelievable at every level against every team. So,
how do you become a Bengals fan?
Family.
All right, Vin Diesel.
Yeah. just that's who we were watching growing up. That was who was on the TV.
Were you and your familia sitting around drinking Coronas?
Watching Palmer, yeah. Rough time as a Bengals fan.
Carson
Raiders
Palmer.
Legend Carson Palmer. You know what we need to do? You know what we need to do, Travi? Is we got to come up with a sound effect every time someone mentions a Raiders legend, and then we could play the.
Have to be some like autumn wind sound effect. Or
oh,
something.
Dude, that would be dope. Actually, do we have the technology? I know our technology is improving, but do we have that?
I have to just go look through it.
Every time we bring up a Raiders legend, you can. You got to speed it up though a little bit. That'd be kind of cool.
Cartoonish.
I don't know. I don't want to desecrate the anthem. I just wanted to go in a little as Dave Hellman walks by. Hey, Dave, real quick, since we're doing this on Radio Row.
Yeah, we're on.
Yeah.
Listen, brother, leisure is really the name of our game. Leisure and a fluid programming schedule is kind of our deal. Kyle over here is pretty upset. Well, he's not upset, but he's concerned that Joe Burrow has a single year of production under his belt.
I'm not concerned.
But your argument is that you don't like guys who have 1 year of production.
At small schools. I don't like guys who are high draft picks.
It's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
That come out of small schools.
Dave Hellman, Raiders.
That have a minimal – their sample size, it's so small. Okay, like, I don't have a problem taking a small school guy, but it's about where you take them. Like, I have the perfect example of one of the guys on our team, and I don't want to bash him, but it's the perfect
– say the name, bro. It's fine.
Brandon Parker.
Okay.
Third round tackle out of NCAA.
NCAA.
And what has he done?
The fight in Tariq Cohen's. Come on.
To be fair, he did start a majority of games for us this year at right tackle.
He didn't. How many games did he start this year?
I'm pulling it up right now.
The point is that Tariq Cohen, where did he get drafted?
I don't even remember. The fifth round, I think?
Fifth or sixth.
That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
But why are you taking a guy like that in the first or second round?
I completely agree with you, actually.
Thank you.
Which, I mean, Eddie's trying to draw me off sides talking about my son, Joe Burrow, but – we were actually, you know, the Cowboys have needed a safety.
Shameless plug alert.
Darren Woodson retired. They've needed a safety for like 25 years. And people are talking about this Kyle Duggar guy out of Lenoir Rhine, supposedly a top 50 pick out of a D2 school. And I am terrified.
Right?
Like, and I mean, that sounds like a shot. Like, he's a great player. He was amazing at the Senior Bowl last month. He was going up against SEC guys and getting the better of big-time players. But that's really scary, man.
Why are you taking him in the top 50?
I can't justify that in the top 50. I would.
But this is. Let me ask you this then, because you guys are cut from the same cloth on this one. What changed? So Kyle's like, oh, I'd be okay with taking a small school guy in the third round. What is the difference between taking a small school guy in the third round and taking him at the end of the second? It's this made up line in the sand.
No, see, I disagree because like I draw the line like day three because like my rule of thumb is like. Your first and second and third round picks, like if they're good picks, they should be able to heavily contribute, if not start. Like it's not out of the realm of possibility that a third round pick should be a rookie starter. Whereas day three, now you're talking about role players and developmental guys. Like that's where I would want to draft a guy like that.
Your favorite special teams players, like those are the day three guys.
I don't know why you mock special teams.
I'm not
the way
mocking
that you
special
do.
Teams.
You are. Listen to the tone in your voice. You're mocking it.
You came at me for suggesting that taking a small school guy on first or second rounds is ridiculous. And here's Dave.
It's not to
my
say.
Point.
Well, it's not to say that it's wrong because some of those guys are going to be great. Like Kyle Duggar could be a Pro Bowler. For all
sure.
I know, you know, I'm drawing blanks. Like the there are like all kinds of great players that have come from schools like that.
Khalil Mack, he went to University of Buffalo. He was
but like Buffalo is still a FBS program. Like we're talking Division II.
Like Grambling State.
Lenoir.
Shout out to
Rhine.
Willie Brown.
It's just scary for me to think that a guy that you draft out of a school like that is worth a top 50 pick. Not saying he can't be a good player. I would just rather take my chance on the guy that's been going against Big Ten, Pac-12, SEC competition week in and week out.
I agree, because Eddie brought up Joe Burrow, saying that he's a first overall pick, because I suggested Mitchell Trubisky.
But your Trubisky argument doesn't hold, because he played in the ACC.
You said the ACC is a credible conference.
It is.
It's not.
I just want to throw this out there. Joe Burrow was good in 2018, by the way. Like, he was nothing like what he became. And it was because LSU ran this, like, Stone Age offense. But he was a good player in 2018. He needed the coaching staff to unlock him. He had decent stats. Kyle's going to go check this. He threw 16 touchdowns and, I believe, only 2 interceptions.
I'm pretty sure that's probably exactly
accurate.
I trust
your knowledge. You know everything about Joe Burrow. But
I mean, like, he completed 60% of his pass. Like, he wasn't great by any stretch. But, like, people act like he was just awful before he became like before this crazy 2019 season. It's not true. He was the MVP of the Fiesta Bowl in 2018.
He played 13 games, had 2,800 yards, 16 touchdowns, and 5 INTs.
5 picks. Sorry,
you forgot 3 of them. Yeah,
yeah, it's okay. But still, like that's efficient football.
It is. It sure is.
And anybody that watched LSU before this season knows like that's how we played. We handed the ball off 45 times and didn't let the quarterback do anything.
It's ridiculous that he attempted 527 passes this past season.
Yeah.
He had 5,600 yards and 60 touchdowns. That is insane.
It's very
with a 76% completion percentage.
He might not be he's definitely not the most talented quarterback ever, but like that, it's very easy to argue it's the greatest college season ever.
How many picks did he have this year, Kyle?
Five.
And I think he threw the last one like Halloween week. Like he didn't throw a pick the final like 2 months of the season. It was the most insane thing I've ever seen.
That is
God,
gross.
I could talk about this all day. Like, y'all just want to relive LSU's championship season. Do your listeners want to hear this? Just a random Cowboys writer coming over to talk to you about
the
draft?
Well, you provided some great points about the draft.
I hope so.
I'm happy that we brought you on because you really made my case, or it helped my case.
You didn't make it,
but you contributed to it.
Shout out Raider Nation.
There it is. Y'all are the best. Look at Hellman.
Black hole forever.
Raiders legend Dave Hellman. Takes the headset off and carries on. A thumbs up and he's on his way. Off to one of his 17 shows that he's on.
That was fun.
Good
We've
stuff.
Really gone
good
off
stuff.
The rails, like you
yeah,
said.
Yeah, we sure
We're
have.
All
I,
over.
We should get out of here, right,
Travis? That's the beauty of Radio Row.
That's the beauty of it. Who's going to stop by next? I don't know. All right, that's it for now, though. We're out of here. We got things to do. We got head coach John Gruden at some point today / early tomorrow, still finalizing the details of coach. But we will hear from him, and when we hear from him, you will hear from him. So, for Eddie Pascal, producer Trav, Digital Don, Logan Norton, Double M, Dave Hellman, really everyone that helps get this little program from A to Z, we thank you, we appreciate you, and, we just need you. Because without you, we're just a bunch of dudes yelling into the void, which is really what we do anyways. But it's nice that at least 17 people listen to this each week. So, until later this week, we will be back. Well, we'll be here all week, but we will catch up with you guys later in the week, as I said, after we talk to head coach John Gruden and we get some more tent rocking and rolling. So, that's it for now, and we will catch you guys soon on Upon Further Review.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Upon Further Review on the Raiders Podcast Network.